This is Matthias Spallina from the MFA program of Virginia Commonwealth University. It's Wednesday, February 13th, 2002, and I'm at American University speaking with Henry Taylor. You cited Galway Kinnell as going through a process of discovering his ability to be humorous in writing.
Well, that's the way reading through the whole body of work looks. I don't know what the process actually was, but it has. There's a moment in his career when suddenly humor becomes much more plentiful.
Did you have a moment like that in your career?
No. I started off finding that every now and then a funny poem seemed like a good idea.
Would you say that your inclination towards humor in poetry comes out of what is called the Southern tradition?
I think the short answer would be yes. You bring up concepts of really extraordinary fuzziness. What the Southern tradition is a topic that occupies professional literary studies organizations with great regularity. But there is a style of storytelling, a stance toward the storyteller and the sound of the voice, and a kind of dignity undercut by a sense of the comic that might be thought of as typically Southern. Yeah.
Do you feel that with the laureate status of Billy Collins and what I see as a groundswell of overtly humorous, borderline comic poets, that humor is becoming more important in contemporary poetry?
I think that's been happening for probably about 30 years. There's been a huge increase in the last 30 years in the number of poets who could be taken seriously enough that they could be charge money to go around and give readings. And over those three decades, the awareness has trickled down that 50 minutes is rather a long time to stand in front of people and be profoundly boring. Not everybody has figured out how to avoid that, but they're working on it. And so more and more people have found that a little humor at a poetry reading is a helpful thing.
Do you see your humorous work, and this might be obvious for the Brother Dave Gardner poems, do you see this work as influenced by the rise of respect for comedians?
Well, I don't know. I haven't made a close study of this. But I think it may be that what we see is not so much an increase in the importance of comedy as an increase in the availability of comedy. Television is a relatively young medium. Before there was television, there was comedy on the radio, and there were comedians who recorded their work, and some of them continue to be people whose effects are felt. The late Richard Buckley, who called himself Lord Buckley and who died in 1959, and so who had very limited experience of television, if any. He was mostly a club comedian. But if you listen closely to Lenny Bruce or Brother Dave Gardner or to several other people, you will hear, if you're familiar with Buckley, you will hear him in the background having had an effect. There's a lot, there are a lot more people, you know, there's Comedy Central on cable TV, because now we have whatever it is, 350 channels that there's nothing on. And so, of course, there is more comedy, but there's also more movies, there's also more infomercials, and so on.
Do you laugh at your own humorous poems?
Yeah. I get over it quicker than maybe I hope others will, but when they first occur to me, they strike me as funny. This was particularly true of the Clarihue book, which, I mean, maybe I should say very quickly what a Clarihue is. It's a four-line, raggedly metered pair of couplets, rhymed couplets, in which the first line either is or ends with a person's name, a real person's name. So the first thing you have to do is rhyme. In the second line, you have to find a rhyme for somebody's name. And then you write another pair of couplets that somehow sums it up. And I told myself on several occasions, okay, I'm going to do such and such a group of people. Having written a Clarihue about Clarence Thomas, I decided to do the other eight currently sitting justices of the Supreme Court. I wasn't even sure I could name all of them when I decided that. And I got to people like Rehnquist, you know, and there's a finite number of things you can do. So it was, the result of my cogitations would make me laugh, yeah.
Who are the poets that you think write poetry that's comic in nature while also accomplishing more? Who do you like in humor's verse?
There are two ways of looking at this. There's a term, light verse, which denotes particular delicacy, not only with humor, but also with difficult technical challenges of meter and rhyme. In that connection, I would mention William J. Smith, who was one of my teachers in graduate school. And in fact, it was from William J. Smith that I learned about the clarihue. I'd never heard of one until he told me about it, or showed me one that he'd written or something. In the light verse mode, a couple of people who are no longer practicing it were some of the best light verse writers in the English language at one time. One is still alive, John Updike, and in the early 60s he wrote light verse that's as good as anybody's. I'm not altogether certain why he has stopped, but I gather it's because he feels that the market for it has gone west. George Starbuck, who is no longer living, was also a great practitioner of light verse. The poem that is terrifically funny without being intricately rhymed is a slightly scarcer phenomenon. Of course, we both have mentioned Billy Collins a couple of times, and he certainly has that ability to look at the startlingly humorous side of things. As, for example, in a poem with a rather long title, which I'm not going to be able to remember in its entirety, Peeling Onions While Listening to Art Blakey's Three Blind Mice, something like that, and the title leads right into the first line, which is, "And I begin to wonder how they came to be blind." And once you're off on that, you see, then the logic of the poem takes you where you need to go. Like, well, were they born together and congenitally blind? If not, how in the world could they have found each other? And so on. That's one kind of thing. But there has also been around for quite a while something wilder. I think of Gregory Corso's great masterpiece, Marriage, which I think has probably influenced me in some ways. The kind of wild extravagance of that poem. It's a masterpiece, is what it is. It's one of the really splendid efforts of the post-war period. And Corso was too strung out to really maybe put together an entire book of really pretty good poems, but he struck gold that time.
It's interesting that you say that the beginning of Collins' poem opens up a new territory. Do you think that a more humorous approach opens up new territory that has not been delved into by previous, more solemn writers?
Maybe. But I really think it's just a matter of individual temperament. I think there have been funny writers ever since there have been writers. And a close acquaintance with somebody like Aristophanes, for example, will demonstrate that just because you're, you know, a classical Greek doesn't mean that you can't be tasteless and rude, and also very funny. There always is, of course, the question of what is tasteful and what is going to offend somebody. I'm grateful to say that I've never tried to write anything in the hope that it would offend no one. This does not seem to me to be a profitable way to approach the writing business. Somebody's going to be irritated almost every time. Let's hope so, anyway.
Maybe it'll be those who worship Cleanth Brooks's idea of high seriousness in art.
I wonder about how serious Cleanth Brooks was sometimes, but I had an encounter with him one time that I've not been able to solve. He came and gave a lecture at the Library of Congress during the poetry consultantship of Maxine Kimmon. And Maxine is a dear friend of mine, and she knew that I told her that I possessed a button, which I had made, a lapel button, that said, "Cleanth, is next to Godth, G-O-D-T-H. And she persuaded me to wear it to the library that evening. And then she introduced Mr. Brooks to me and all but took hold of the back of his neck and made him, you know, aimed him so that he could see it. And his response was either humorless or a brilliantly low-key, funny thing to do. He launched into a little lecture about the origins of the name Cleanth. "I'm sure you may recall," he said, "the character, Molière's character, Cléante." Of course I did. And so on. And he went on just long enough to, I think, feel that he had had his revenge.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.